I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It is a cold-hearted feature of economic reporting that some of the most painful and frustrating experiences people go through end up as numbers and are often measured and judged only statistically. When you lose your job, it hits your self-esteem, your friends, your family, your future, and your kids' schooling. Well, then you open up the business page and read that yours and others equal 30,000 lost jobs in June. But hey, that's actually good news because it's fewer jobs than were lost in the previous month. Cold comfort. No matter how you try to make sense of the numbers, though, and the personal stories behind them, every American has a stake in the state of the economy and understanding when and how it's either getting healthier or sicker. Today, on The Connection, we'll hear a couple of different takes on the economic fortunes and future of America from people whose job it is to understand and explain what's going on. And Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Are there signs, any signs, of an economic turnaround in your neighborhood? Or do you see things going from bad to worse? And just how prepared are you to live a life of employment uncertainty if that's the recipe for the future? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bob Posen is with me in the studio. He is currently Secretary of Economic Affairs for the state of Massachusetts. To this job, he brings 15 years' experience with Fidelity Investments. He was president of the company for 5 years, leaving in 2001. Bob, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Michael Mandel. He's chief economist with Businessweek magazine, author of a book in the year 2000, which predicted the current slump. It was called The Coming Internet Depression, and he's joining us from our New York NPR studio. Michael, nice to have you with us again.
Glad to be here.
Let's start, if I can, Bob, with you, because you're saying earlier this week that you're beginning to see signs of an economic turnaround. Is this just the first few glimmers, or are you looking at some data that's actually got you smiling?
Well, I think we're looking at a number of things. I had a series of surveys taken of corporate CEOs to look at their hiring patterns, and I was surprised to see that over a third of them expected to hire in the third quarter. And most of them expected to stay the same, and very few expected to lay off. Now, we have the June labor statistics that came out, and you can argue about them a lot of ways, and surely the most salient point that was reported was the unemployment rate went up from 6.1 to 6.4% and the number of unemployed. But if you look beneath the covers, there are at least three things that should give you a little better feeling. One is the number of temporary workers is rising. And temporary workers tends to be a leading indicator because in good times, as you approach them, people start to be hired as temporary workers. Right. In bad times, they get laid off quickly.
Can we leave the temp workers aside for just a minute? Because I want to take what the CEOs are saying and have a careful look at that. Why, in a study like that, should we believe what a CEO is saying? Not that they're none of them trustworthy people, but what are you asking them, and exactly what are they saying?
We're asking them exactly whether they intend to increase, decrease, or stay the same in terms of employment in the third quarter. These people are the people who make the decisions for hiring. Of course, we have a sample of 100 different CEOs in Boston, then 100 CEOs in Chicago, 100 CEOs in Dallas, and 100 CEOs in San Francisco. So like most samples, it's only a representative group, which may not be perfectly representative. So you don't want to get hung up on the particular number. There were 36% that said they were going to increase. The important thing is to see the general trend. And the general trend is that for the first time in a while, we have a significant number or significant percentage that are saying they're going to increase employment. And we have most people saying they're going to stabilize, not going to lay off. And that's the way I
so
think
the,
you need
the
to...
So the sum of it all is that there should be some new jobs added in this quarter, because we're in the third quarter,
correct,
aren't we?
The sum is that we're stabilizing this big drop we've had over the last 2 years, and that we're starting to have a modest amount of hiring in the third quarter. And that's sort of... it's always difficult to call the turnaround, but that's what seems to me as the key sort of learning that you get out of this set of surveys rather than the specific precise percentages.
Let's hear from Michael Mandel on this. Michael, the word from the chief executive officers, that seems to be an indication of some confidence. Do you read it that way?
Well, Dick, I think that it's true that the third quarter and the fourth quarter are going to be better than the first half of the year. But that's really not the point. The point is, are we about to see a sustained improvement of employment that will take us into 2004 and beyond? And here I think there's two forces going on. One, there's job destruction, and the job destruction is coming from technology. It's coming from the uses of technology to get rid of workers, to replace workers, to become more efficient.
You're not talking about high-tech people who lost their jobs. You're talking about people whose work is being replaced by computers?
That's right, and I'm talking about the erosion of jobs in various ways. Technology can be used to move jobs offshore. It can be used to improve the productivity of companies, and as it does, you need fewer workers.
Right.
That's the job destruction side. Then there's the job creation side, and in my view, you get job creation when you have innovation, the creation of new industries, the creation of new products. And so far, we're not seeing that revive yet. So even if we get a job revival in the second half, I think it's only going to be a very, very moderate one. My question really is, and it's very difficult to tell right now, my question is, are we going to see a return to the 1990s, that sort of vibrancy, that sort of technological innovation that created lots and lots of new jobs? Or are we going to see something more stagnant where we're pulled down by the forces of job destruction as much as we're pushed up, and that we won't see a lot of new net creation of jobs?
Let me answer both points, which are well taken. As to job destruction, we've had this tremendous increase in productivity driven by the use of technology that has led to fewer jobs. But I believe personally that we're sort of reaching diminishing returns on that. Most places have now put in their computers. We have most people now.
Let me just stop you right here. If we are reaching diminishing returns in productivity, we are in far worse shape than anybody thinks, because the only thing that's keeping this economy going at this point is rising productivity. And if we don't get rising productivity, we are indeed going to be in bad shape.
Let me be precise. I think we will continue to have an increase in productivity, but the rate of increase will start to slow down a little. We've had a tremendous increase in the rate of productivity. But for instance, when I used to run a large company, we went from mainframe computers to distributed computers. And that has happened in most companies. In various state governments, we now have computers online for everybody. We have e-licensing and various things. So a lot of the low-hanging fruit has been captured. Now, that's not to say that we won't continue to have productivity increases. Just the job destruction that is associated with these tremendous surges in productivity, that is what I think is going to slow down. On the other hand, I believe that there are some very significant forces for job creation. If you look at the whole economic picture, you can see that consumers have held up pretty well.
Can you go to the temp worker thing here at this point? Because you had started on that, and I'm not clear how you make the case that, you know, a company hiring someone for 10 or 30 hours a week and with no guarantee of future is an indicator of change.
What I think is, when companies are in the situation where they're at a bottom, but they're not sure whether they're going to start to grow a lot, what they do is, first, they ask the workers in the company to work harder. They essentially, as people have attrition, as people leave jobs, they don't replace them, and they want the existing people to work harder
and to get more wound up. We've seen some of that over the last couple of
years. Yes, and that's one of the reasons you have higher productivity as well as use of technology.
The old jobless recovery.
But then when you start, at some point, the people there who are left saying, gee, we just can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
We're getting a little more business we want. And so one thing you see as the economy starts to turn, you see the hiring of temporary workers as employers say, well, it looks like things are turning around, but we're really not sure. We don't want to get locked into big termination contracts. We don't want to get locked into employment contracts. We don't want to get locked into this. So that's why temporary workers tends to be a leading indicator. But I did want to say one thing more fundamental.
Excuse me. I think a couple of times in this recovery, temporary workers have surged, and it turned out to be a false signal. And it's not clear why this one should be any different.
Well, let me address that, because it's good point. It has happened in the past. And this is where I think you get to the fundamentals of our company business earnings turned around. As I said, consumers have held up very well. The question really is are we going to have a return of business investment and capital equipment? That is what is in the end going to lead to a sustained recovery and more than just a blip in temporary workers. And here we see a few things. One is price of oil was very high. It's now come down. We had a huge, second of all, you had a huge uncertainty associated with the Iraq war. Even though we still have skirmishes, that uncertainty, and uncertainty, business hates uncertainty right. for investments. The third of all, we are starting to see for the first time the working off of some of this excess capacity that Mr. Mandel pointed out several years ago was built into the internet system, the overbuilding in telecom, the overbuilding in tech. We're starting to see for the first time some business investment.
Michael, I'd like you to come in on how we can measure change in the economy, because what Bob's doing is saying, look at this, look at this, look at this. These are indicators which could be telling us, you know, in some that maybe there's a turnaround.
What he's doing is he's telling the story that economic forecasters classically tell. And what they see is they say, okay, once we've worked off the bottom, then everything is going to keep going up again. But economic forecasters typically are really terrible at calling the turns. In fact, historically, they always do what Bob is doing now, which is predict 3 months or 6 months ahead that things are going to get better.
I'm not an economic forecaster, and I haven't done this in the past.
Anyway,
you sound a lot like one.
Go ahead, Michael.
What I look at is I look at the underlying fundamentals of innovation in the economy, and that's what I care about. What I care about is
can I stop you, because I don't understand quite what you mean. I can understand someone hiring 10 temp workers and saying, okay, that means this. But how do you measure innovation?
Well, before we get to the question of how to measure it, let me talk about why it's important. There's kind of a normal flow of the economy, and you've got an increase, people spend more, you have people being born, they form households, they buy homes and so forth. And this kind of just goes on very naturally. Then what we had in the 90s was something extra. We had this burst of innovation and investment that helped carry the economy up. It created lots of jobs, and it was extremely good. Then over the last couple of years, we've seen a real slowdown. We've seen a real slowdown in startups, as I'm sure that Bob can tell you in Massachusetts. We've seen a real slowdown in the rate at which companies are willing to invest in new product development. And so the fuel of the economy has been running low. So I look beyond the little flows of temp workers and so forth to the things which are important, which is the underlying innovation. And so what I look at things like venture capital investment. I look at things like startups. I look at investment in R&D. I look at companies making new product announcements. And what I see at this point is I don't see the turn yet. What I see is that the second half of the year will be better than the first half. It's going to be better because there's all this fiscal and monetary stimulus coming in, the tax cuts and so forth. But in terms of the underlying growth, I don't quite see it yet.
All right, Connection listeners, two different takes on the economy, two different ways of looking at a great and complicated mass of data that we're all trying to make sense of. When we come back after the break, we're going to turn this conversation to what it means for you, what it means for your job, what it means for your future. And we'd like to hear from you with a little bit of an assessment of how you see it where you live. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. With me in the studio, I have Bob Posen, the Secretary of Economic Affairs for Massachusetts. He's responsible for developing the governor's strategy for closing the state's $3 billion budget gap at present. Michael Mandel's joining us from our studios in New York. He's chief economist of Business Week magazine. He's author of a book you may remember from the year 2000 called The Coming Internet Depression, predicting the problems that we've been having for the past 3 years. Now, Connection listeners, our number, as I said, is 1-800-423-8255. The statistics tell us that if you lost your job today, You wouldn't get a job again until Thanksgiving. That's about how long people are out of work, 20 weeks, as in terms of the way people pull together statistics. But we'd like to know, beyond what the numbers are saying, the national numbers, how you see the picture. Bob Posen, let me start, if I can, with you, because you are working in a political system now rather than strictly corporate. Does that mean that you're pushed or inclined to put a rosy spin on numbers?
I think we're trying to see the numbers honestly because we're in the process of making budget projections where we, if we're wrong, we'll be in the soup at the end of the year. We have to have a balanced budget at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. So we have a lot tighter fiscal discipline than the federal government. We're not allowed to print money. So I think that we're taking a pretty realistic view of the numbers. And I think that in terms of the jobs, we are seeing job destruction in traditional manufacturing, what I call commodity-type manufacturing, things like vitamins. We're not the low-cost producer in the United States. On the other hand, we have a vibrant biotech industry here, and there are things like clinical trials, and there are very fancy drugs, and that's what we can hope to have. And then, second of all, we're seeing job expansion in certain areas like healthcare, education, financial services, and these are the areas
now,
of
was
growth.
That just for Massachusetts, or are you
think
seeing
it
that
is
in
for,
a larger
it
sense?
It is very much for Massachusetts, but I think it's also true of states like New York, California.
Can I step
and,
in
and
here
these
for,
states that,
for a second?
Yeah, just let him finish, Michael, yeah. and then
I think it is true generally of the higher service-oriented and higher-cost states. There are still states that have a chance of doing commodity manufacturing, like some of the southern states, but even they are being challenged by China and other low-cost producers. So I think we need, from a jobs point of view, we need to concentrate on the area where we have comparative advantage and where our people can use their intellectual capital to do better than other countries.
Michael, over to you.
I think in those industries are actually growing nationally as well. But I wanted to say something about college-educated workers and what's been happening to them. And despite what we've read about in terms of layoffs at high-tech layoffs and so forth, the college-educated unemployment rate really hasn't risen over the last year. Most of the losses have been at the bottom. And this, unfortunately, is a little bit worrisome to me because what's happened is that college-educated workers have actually held up better than other types of workers during this recession. And these are the workers that are most dependent on having an economy which is based on innovation and growth. I mean, Bob mentioned education. The fact is that there's been a tremendous boom in the number of workers in education, number of teachers and so forth over the last decade. It's not going to continue because we've got the baby boom echo is sort of moving through the system and out
again.
You're
saying the growth is not in it or won't be in education?
The growth has been so much in education over the last decade, that growth is actually slowing. In places like healthcare, what we're seeing is that the massive push to hold down costs is going to slow down growth as well. And frankly, the growth in financial services is kind of hard to believe. What's happened is that banks have been expanding their employment because of the mortgage boom. And when that's over, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of layoffs in financial services as well.
Well, where can that go now? I mean, who's going to refinance their home past 1%, right?
Exactly. And we may be running into a period right now where college-educated workers who have in some sense I'm not saying there's been a lot of layoffs, but a lot of the college-educated workers who have some sense skirted the recession may end up getting hit harder unless we see a revival in the sort of innovation and a new product development, which is what you need educated workers for.
Yeah, I think I see a lot of the points you're making, but I interpret the data differently. I think the fact that we've had very few layoffs in the college-educated workers just emphasizes my point that it's intellectual capital, it's the high-skilled jobs. That's where we as a country have a comparative advantage. And what we really have to do is to have the lower-skilled people really retrain. Take something like nursing or take something like being a technician, not a high-level biotech person, but a technician. This is where we need to have the retraining, and we have to have people who have flexibility. It's, to me, a comforting thing that we've seen college-educated people not have this big drop in unemployment. That just shows as long as we can continue playing for our intellectual capital, we're in good shape. Now, on the mortgage...
Let me just stop you before we go too far down that road, because there's a whole number of people who want to join us on the phones. We should let them in. Let's go to Malden, Massachusetts. Carol's on the line. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
You're quite welcome. I just wanted to say I've been out of work for almost 2 years. I was in manufacturing and production of electronic subassemblies. And
were you on the line, Carol? What were you doing?
No, I was a planner.
Okay.
So I was in the office, and orders dropped. This is prior to 9/11, so orders, you know, the economy is dropping off anyway.
Right.
It's almost impossible to get a job. There are very few openings, and part of this is because they're farming a lot of production to overseas. We're going to end up as a service economy.
Which is what Michael Mandel was saying earlier.
That's right. You know, the erosion in manufacturing jobs, not just the low-level manufacturing jobs, but the high-level ones, has continued and continued and continued. And beyond anybody's possible forecast, it just keeps going down.
I want to just quote from Bob Posen's op-ed in the New York Times for Carol and then ask you both.
Mm-hmm.
Just to talk to Carol. Bob, you're saying job seekers should be flexible, prepared to take temporary work that may lead to a permanent job. Would that work in...
And ready to retrain in response to employers' evolving needs.
Okay.
And I think
you wanted to finish that.
And that's really the important point here is traditional manufacturing, electronic components that have become commoditized. It's going to be very hard for those jobs to stay in the United States. But that's very different than... R&D research on technology that's very different than biotech R&D. And in a place like Massachusetts, we see the growth in those R&D centers. But that's very different than doing the commoditized electronic components business. So I would say that to the caller, this is retraining is the key. And it's not easy. It's not very easy for people to retrain. But the manufacturing of the commodity type goods, whether it be in electronics or in textiles, is tough.
And the work
what area would you like her to
the
what area would you like her to go into?
Well, we have things like clinical jobs in various healthcare sectors. We have technician jobs. We need nurses. We have specialized manufacturing in very sophisticated plastics in Western Mass. These are the sorts of things where I think there are job opportunities.
There may be job opportunities, but I'll tell you this: the pay is like very low. I've been part-timing, and right now I've got a job that's paying $7.50 an hour. It's temp work, and I mean that doesn't cover your expenses. It is making paupers out of people.
Are there opportunities, Carol, for retraining for someone in your circumstances? Do you see that?
There are some opportunities for retraining, but like, you know, you go to DET and there's retraining, but what you get retraining, you have to do it within a certain time limit for unemployment. And, you know, you're looking for a regular job. So within 15 weeks, you've got to decide what you're going to retrain in for them to help you out. But even if you do that, some of these, you know, a licensed practical nurse, this or that, yeah, you can retrain, but you're still looking at a low-level income. And it's hurting people. This is great for shareholders of companies, farming everything out.
I wasn't just talking about the retraining that goes along with unemployment. We have... the governor of Massachusetts put in a request for $21 million for company-based training, and that's going to have a lot more bang for your buck because those are jobs where the company is really saying, I want to train you for this particular job. Now, so it's unclear whether we're going to get that money from the legislature, but it's not just training in the unemployment process.
It's also unclear whether or not the jobs are there right now.
So, Michael, what would your advice to Carol be? This is sort of why people are tuning in. They want to know what to think about their own future.
Well, the first thing to think about their own future is to sort of realize that the problems that they're having finding a job right now are not just their own fault. This is a jobless recovery. It means that companies are working just as hard to not hire people as they are to hire people. And the way that that changes, all right, and what happens is when you have these big economic changes, it's not just the people. First thing to remember is that the industries that are going to be hiring in the future are not necessarily the ones that are hiring right now. Hiring is very unpredictable. And if, for example, if you go back to 92, and if you had just picked where you were going to go into by the industries that were growing in 91 and 92, you would not have guessed high tech. because that's not what was growing at that point. So my first advice is actually not if you're going to retrain or pick a new career, don't pick a new career based on who's hiring right now. Pick a new career based on doing something that you would want to do, because the level of unpredictability is extremely high. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the growth of jobs really depends on sort of forces that are out of people's control, including a rebound. There's sort of, you know, that biotech that he keeps talking about is a very small number of jobs. It could get much bigger. We don't know at that point. But what you want to see is you want to see the sort of broad economic revival that creates new industries, and that's what creates the new jobs.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're surely sending a message of hopelessness to this listener and other people, and I think that there are two points. One is that it's nice to say people should train to do what they want to do, and there are lots of young men that I've talked to that want to be sportscasters. Unfortunately, there aren't very many sportcasting jobs, so it's not, you can't just do what you want to do. You have to do what you want to do relative to where the demand is. And second of all, you're right to say that future estimations and projections are always a little iffy. But when I'm talking about in nursing, we have lots of studies that show over the next 5, 10 years, 15 years that they're going to have a need for more nursing. And same thing.
10 years ago, there were studies that showed there was going to be a tremendous need for physical therapists. 2 years later, there was a surplus of them. Then I have to tell you, all of these studies that the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out on where the shortages are have historically proven to have terrible track records. And what I mean about training to do what you want is I'm not talking about people who want to be sportscasters, of which there's 5 or 10 jobs. I'm talking about if you want to be a nurse, be a nurse, but don't go into being a nurse because you think that's where the jobs are going to be, because you could turn out to be very surprised in the way that things develop.
Well, let's give the last word to Carol, if we can. Carol.
Well, I just want to say part of this is the capitalist system. I mean, even the people who are unemployed, the people who are left, the people I've talked to in my old office, they're just overworked. And companies are not, and I don't see it from the Bush administration either. It is basically, you are left on your own to try to find something so you can pay your rent and pay your expenses and everything. And the companies, because there's such a glut of workers, they don't have to pay anything now. I mean, so they are paying the minimum they could possibly pay people. And people are going to, you're going to try and get a job just so you can get the bennies, because you need health insurance. I mean, this is not just an unemployment problem. This is an entire systemic problem.
Carol, thanks for your call.
Okay,
nice
thank
to have you on the program. 1-800-423-8255. Next to Lincoln, Massachusetts, Sam's with us now. Hi, Sam.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was just actually piggybacking on the last caller. And, you know, what I'm hearing is a lot of talk about the economy as if it's some natural phenomenon like rainfall or the weather that you have, you know, very little control over. And my comment is the economy is exactly the opposite. It's controlled by humans, by men and women. And when you pass legislation by NAFTA, like NAFTA, as an example, there are many, many other examples, it has a tremendous effect on hundreds of thousands of workers. And my opinion is it affects them in a negative way. But my general observation is this is a human-made phenomenon.
But Sam, what about the ability of those humans to affect the economy in some way other than negative? Because one of the things that Michael Mandel writes a lot about is that you've got to go out and create risk, that the boom and the bust is actually an indication of a healthy economy rather than one that's thumping along with flat tires. And that some of it's just got to come from people's,
My point is I don't agree. That's just one version of an economy. You can create an economy that's unpredictable. You can also create economies that are very predictable. And the whole conversation is framed as if, gee, economies are just naturally unpredictable.
Can I address
that
Michael, point? Which is that the European economies are much more heavily managed than we are. The European economies also have much higher unemployment rates than we do, much, much higher, with better benefits for the people who are unemployed. And so I think there is an interesting trade-off here, which is that If you want to heavily manage your economy, you cut yourself off from some of the change in innovation. You end up with higher unemployment and a system where there are more people who sort of feel cut off from the growth. My belief is that what we saw in the 1990s, which was actually after NAFTA, okay, this tremendous boom, which put a lot of people to work, which drove down poverty, which really lowered the unemployment rate for the people at the bottom, I think that that was very, very desirable. I would love to see the 1990s done over again. That's my position on this.
I take an intermediate position here, as I think that there is a modest amount that humans can do to manage the economy. Sure, you can have something like NAFTA, and we are moving interest rates down, which is a positive. We have rate cuts on the tax side, which stimulate the economy. But there are also business cycles, and those business cycles are pretty strong. As Michael pointed out in his book, we had a tremendous excess of capacity in telecom technology, and that takes several years to work off. And when you finally work it off, then you start to have your economy bottom out and come back, which is where I think we are. So I think that we can affect through public policy some aspects of this, and we are trying at the state level and to some degree at the federal level to do this. But we ought not to overestimate our ability to control things, especially if they are influenced by global trends like what's happening in China and India and these places. We have to be appropriately modest about our ability to manage these economies.
Sam, let's go back to you.
Well, I would disagree. I think that that's not acceptable, and I would respond to someone like Carol that she has every right to demand health insurance, to demand a minimum standard of living. This is supposed to be the wealthiest country in the world. There's no reason that I can see why every person in the United States can't have a basic level of living, and that it's predictable, it's maintainable, and it's all made up. People get together in rooms and make all this stuff up. My point is, it's not like a natural phenomenon. This is completely human-made.
But the fact is, it can be both simultaneously. It's both human made, and what happens is that there are things that happen that are in fact not controllable. It would be wonderful if we could sort of flip a switch and make things go faster or slower. The point being is that it's not. Now, I actually tend to agree with you that we should be putting in floors on the bottom, but that's not the same thing.
All right, Sam, thanks a lot for your call. Connection listeners, we're taking a short break. When we come back, more from you on whether or not you're willing to look at that temporary job or take a hard second look at retraining in terms of positioning yourself for a better job for the future. And if you're running a business right now, what are you thinking? Are you ready to hire people? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'd like to hear from you. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. My guest in New York this hour, Michael Mandel, chief economist with Businessweek magazine. He's working on a book due out in about 6 months' time. It's called Overcoming the Growth Crisis. We're going to talk a little bit more than we have even on this program about embracing the boom and bust as a sign of some health in the economy. Bob Posen is here with me in the studio. He's Secretary of Economic Affairs in Massachusetts, also a professor at Harvard University, teaching graduate courses in law and business, brings to both those jobs his experience in 15 years as a senior executive with Fidelity Investments. And maybe we should just pick up one part of where Sam left us. And Bob, first to you, then to Michael. It's hard to quarrel with the essence of what he's saying, that for such a wealthy country to have such a high rate of people without health care, people without jobs, people without prospects, you know, like Carol in Malden, whether or not there isn't something a little more thoughtful that can be done.
Well, I happen to agree with him that we should have better health insurance, especially for people who don't get it at work. And there are a whole series of different proposals to do that. But I think that Sam is fundamentally misguided to think that we can manage this economy so that everybody can have a job, or we can get the unemployment rate down to 2 or 3%. There are larger forces that are going to affect him, going to affect me, going to affect any president of the United States.
There's no larger force than this country. This is the economic
Well, let
powerhouse.
Me name two then that are very important. One is China. China has 1.2 billion people, and it is the low-cost producer in almost every area of manufacturing. Every manufacturer in the United States and Europe has to think about, would it be better to do their manufacturing in China? So, in a sense, China is exporting deflation across the world. It's keeping prices and to some degree wages low in many of these areas like textiles and toys and these sorts of things. On the other hand, a second force that's working in our favor now is the U.S. Currency, the dollar, has finally declined. And that means that for a while, we will have an advantage in terms of U.S. exports, that U.S. exports will have a comparative advantage because the dollar is declining. And that's a very big positive. But this will not be exports of the U.S. in these low-skilled areas, which China has a very great comparative advantage. It will be exports in high-skilled areas, in medical devices, in various type of technology products, in services like accounting and investment management. Here are the areas where we can do better. So these are two big forces, China and the decline in U.S. currency. One really a force of challenge to us, the other a real help. These are bigger than all of us.
All right, Michael, let's hear from you on this.
The 90s saw the biggest fall in the poverty rate in decades, and that's
in this country.
In this country, also globally, frankly, because okay. But that's a different question. We can deal with that in a second if you want. But in this country, it showed the biggest fall in poverty in decades, and there was a reason for that. The reason is that we had very strong growth, and the very strong growth was built on a lot of new industries, and they were producing non-commodity products, as Bob would say. And so the question really for me is, what are the non-commodity products that we are going to be producing over the next decade that won't be imitated in China or India, that can't be moved? And I think from the point of view of the first caller, Carol, all right, the thing that would make her happiest is to have a new job in a new growing industry. And that's who's going to be doing the hiring. And that's my concern. And anything, what I would ask, and I'm sure he's going to have an answer to this, what I would ask him, Bob, is what the state of Massachusetts is doing to help stimulate that sort of activity. Because at the end of the day...
You mean stimulating the risk-taking to give...
Stimulating the risk-taking, because at the end of the day, that's what's important. You know, what I care about, I don't... This is going to sound stupid, okay?
I'd like to answer the question.
Before you do, sorry. Before I want to clarify, are you talking about providing incentives to venture capitalists to take a risk? Because some people will be scratching their heads over that one, Michael.
Well, that's of course they're scratching their heads because they don't understand what's really happening here. Look, what I care about, I don't care about growth. This is going to sound stupid. Economies grow; that's what they do. The real question is, do you get slower growth or faster growth? And the way that you get faster growth is by the creation of new industries that didn't exist before. And they come from weird and odd places. And that's who does all the... We live in a world right now that has whole industries, millions of jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago because of the information revolution. What we need is something equivalent over the next 10 years to generate another round of sort of 10 million jobs or so.
Let me just give you a quick answer. The quick answer is Massachusetts, despite its budget crisis, is hanging on to its R&D credit, to its tax investment credit for new equipment. We are promoting the educational institutions like MIT. We're working closely with the Deshpande Center, which gives out grants to people with innovative ideas. The state just put up a matching grant so that University of Mass could get a big NSF grant for a new work in atmospherics. And most importantly, we're working with, listening to, meeting with the clusters and technology and financial services and all these areas, and saying to them, what do you need to grow, and trying to the extent we can, help them.
I want to go back to our callers, to Hampton, Virginia. Now Al's on the line. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to suggest there are no simple answers, as your experts have explained to us, but I would like to suggest that one aspect that would improve the situation for the working people is the fact that the unions in this country have been destroyed. They have no power. Now, we have all economies are mixed economies, although we like to think we have a free economy. But in our case, because of money contributions to Congress, the industries, corporations get all the goodies, and the worker is down at the bottom of the pile.
Well, there certainly have been some pretty strong arguments made on behalf of working people by unions in Washington. Talk to me, though. I mean, let's talk about this in strict economic terms, Al, because you'll know the argument that is made, and Bob was just making it earlier, that if you're going to compete against a non-union, underpaid Chinese workforce, that to pay people in North America to do the same work, to make the same cars, and to give them all the benefits guaranteed by a union contract means it's harder to compete. What do you say to that?
Yes, that's quite true. And it's not only salaries I'm talking about. But let me point out to you that when you say, oh, nursing will be great and so forth, do you know how many nurses come from foreign countries now? All our computer stuff is going out to India. You know, the idea of free trade was not to cut down our salaries, but to raise the salaries of the people in the poor countries. And unless we have unions to stand up for the rights of the worker, you're not going to have any help in that area. I'm not saying there's a simple answer. What I'm saying is that this is a great weakness of the competing interests.
Michael, is there any space here, Michael, for a return to union standing up for workers? I mean,
but it's not in the place that he expects. Let me just say one thing about free trade. In the 90s, unemployment went down to below 4% despite free trade, because of free trade. So you can have low unemployment and rising wages, as we did in the 90s, even when you have free trade. One thing to realize about this workforce, that this workforce in the U.S. is becoming increasingly educated. The percentage of people who have some college education is increasing. The number of people who have college degrees is increasing. And so if you want to think about where the growth in this workforce is, it's in the college-educated workers, and you want to think about, do those people want to be unionized? Because if they don't want to be unionized, then what you're left with is a shrinking base of other people who do. And that's really where a lot of the conflict is in this society at this point, which is, do people with a college education think of themselves as workers, or do they think of themselves as part of management? And I think that as we go on, and there is pressure to drive down wages for people who have a lot of education, that they will start thinking of themselves as workers.
Let's see if we can squeak in one more call to Boston now. And Larry's on the line. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Point I wanted to make, I'm an entrepreneur. I've just started my fourth company here in Massachusetts, and I raised venture capital money. In my previous company, I actually took public and have been involved in all the changing regulations and rules about public companies and about investments. And one of the things that I'm very concerned about, which is, I think, hamstringing the economy, is all these changes in regulations are making it more difficult for venture capitalists to fund companies and to have a method by which they can have an exit strategy.
Give me an example of what you're talking about. I'm not.
Well, as an example, now, because of all the regulations for public companies, it's difficult to take a smaller company public and have a strategy by which venture capitalists can make money. In other words, they have to be able to sell the company or take it public in order for it to be successful.
Can I ask you, though, Larry, whether or not, and this sort of goes back to the larger theme of the program, whether this is a time that you want to take that risk, build that company, take a chance, rather than getting into the regulatory nightmare that I'm sure is a preoccupation for you, just in terms of what it says about the health of the economy? Are you looking to build and grow a company right now?
Absolutely. I mean, I just raised venture capital money. I've hired 20 people in the last 60 days. And this is actually the perfect time to invest in new companies, because as if anybody, if you've been in the business long enough, you know this is a cycle. And when the cycle comes around and people start buying technology again, the position you want to be in is to have a new technology. Now is the time to create technologies that will be bought in the future.
And I agree. I think this is exactly the time at the bottom of the cycle to be investing. And I think that, is it Larry, that his point about all these new regulations, we had some terrible corporate scandals, but then we had this huge piece of legislation, which is contained some good things, but also some overreactions. And one of the most difficult things is getting independent directors for small companies that want to go public. Nobody wants... It's easy to get an independent director of IBM. It's hard to get an independent director to take the risk and put their personal net worth on the line for a small company who wants to get public. And we know that some of the best directors are people who are, quote unquote, interested, not disinterested. So this is a sort of inadvertent consequence. Of course, we want to have good corporate governance and good independent directors at the big companies, but he's making a very real point on the small companies. You try to go out and get a small company to raise capital, go public, and you think, would you be on their board of directors and take all that risk and see if you can get director's insurance now for that sort of small company? So the small companies do have a problem, and we should really distinguish them from the large companies in terms of many of these corporate governance regulations.
Michael Mandel, can I just hear from you on whether or not you see this, as both Bob and Larry are saying, as the bottom of a cycle and the time to invest and perhaps the time when new jobs will be grown? Because it's sort of where
we began. I think we've reached a real fork in the road here, and I have to tell you that I don't know which fork we're going to go down. Along one road, it's we have a lot more people like Larry, and we have another revival of venture capital and new business formation, and we get a lot of dynamic growth. But I have to tell you that I'm worried that we could go down the other fork, which leads to more stagnant economy, something that looks a lot more like Europe with higher unemployment rates. And I really don't know which way we're going to go at this point.
Reasonable uncertainty.
I think at every bottom, it's a tough call. We could go either way. I'm more optimistic, obviously, than Michael. I think there are a lot of issues, and I think we will be in not the type of growth we have in the 90s, but hopefully we can get out of this slide down and start bottoming out and going into slow growth and starting to grow again. I don't think we're going to have this huge growth that we had in the 90s, but I am optimistic that we will start to get into a modest growth mode.
Okay, we've just a minute left in the program, so a couple of word answer from either of you. What are you watching? Michael Mandel, what are you watching to gauge economic health now?
I want to see people like Larry starting new businesses. That's what I want.
Fairly simple. Bob Posen.
I want to see the level of business investment. I want to see businesses, whether they're investing in new equipment, new factories, these sorts of things. That's the thing that we haven't had in a while, and that will show us whether we're really turning around.
Bob Posen, thanks so much for coming in. Bob Posen is Secretary of Economic Affairs for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Michael Mandel, thanks again for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here.
Michael is
Chief
Economist.
Thank you.
Business Week's magazine.
Yeah, thank you. It was a good session.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.